ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
One of Australia's most recognisable broadcasters is facing the biggest battle of his life. Alan Jones has pleaded not guilty to multiple historical sexual assault charges, and now the case is before the courts.
I'm not going to dwell here on the allegations made about me, other than to say that I refute them entirely.
As witnesses step into the box and the evidence unfolds, the Case Of podcast will be your eyes and ears inside the courtroom. Search the Case Of podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
When vision emerged of a Russian drone hunting down a vegetable seller in eastern Ukraine, it was like something you'd see in a video game. What might seem like dystopian science fiction is rapidly becoming the norm in warfare. Today, staff writer at The Atlantic, Anne Applebaum, on why it won't be long before drone use expands, and why the world needs to be ready for it. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. And let's start by talking about Yuri. Now, he's a Ukrainian who lives very close to the front line of the war. Tell me about him and what happened to him.
Yuri is 52 years old, and he runs a vegetable stand in a market. And while he was laying out his vegetables, a black Russian drone began chasing him. And he saw the drone, and he ran from one side of his vegetable truck to the other. He was holding two bulbs of garlic, no gun, so he clearly wasn't a soldier. And he started gesturing at the drone, showing it the vegetables so that it would know he wasn't fighting. Nevertheless, the drone kept following him until finally it dropped an explosive on him, which blew up and threw him several feet away. He survived.
Yes.
He had a concussion and some injuries, but is alive. And was interviewed a few hours later by a Ukrainian journalist and described his battle with the drone almost as if he'd been speaking to a person. He was saying, "I showed it that I was selling vegetables, but it didn't understand me." So it was a very surreal experience, and there was a video made of this whole episode, which is equally surreal.
Yes, the vision online of this is actually quite terrifying. It's like something out of a computer game.
Yeah, I mean, of course, these kinds of things have happened before to other people. Mm-hmm. They've happened in Ukraine. They've happened in the Israelis used drones in Gaza. You know, the U.S. used drones in Afghanistan. But we haven't seen this kind of video. And I also think that the Russians are using drones in a new way. In other words, the cameras on the drones were supposed to help the people directing them identify civilians. In other words, show them when they were making mistakes so that they wouldn't hit people accidentally, which was the case with drones that were used years ago. And it looks like now the Russians are using this camera facility to chase people, whether they're civilians or soldiers. And this seems like a new era in the use of drones. And of course, it has all kinds of implications for how drones could be used in other places. Maybe not in a war zone, maybe by criminals, maybe by terrorists. The capacity that they have to follow people, to chase them around in circles, to identify people is something I just don't think we've quite reckoned with yet.
Wow. Okay. So for a while, drones, I mean, they were a good way of avoiding civilian casualties, but it really depends on who's driving them, I suppose. And the UN has documented some pretty awful attacks, right, when people have been the target in eastern Ukraine. Tell me about that.
So there have been some incidents when the UN has identified the use of drones, for example, when a building has been bombed and firemen or policemen arrive to help the survivors, and there are drones hovering in the air that are designed to kill the firemen or kill the policemen. So first responders are being targeted by drones. I mean, I know that there are multiple examples of documented use of drones deliberately against civilians in order to kill them. And that's now a major feature of the war in eastern Ukraine.
And you point out, Anne, that when you were there in Kherson in the east back in 2023, no one wanted to go near the river because the Russians were on the other side of the river, but now the whole city is in range. There's nowhere to hide.
The whole city is in range, and all up and down the front line, all kinds of towns and villages are in range. I mean, all kinds of places are in range that weren't before. And again, that's a feature of this war, but pretty soon it's going to be a feature of all wars.
All right, well, Anne, let's consider a bit further how these drones are being used in this war. Now, we have discussed quite a bit on this podcast Ukraine's increasing success on the battlefield because of them.
Ukrainian military officials say its drones have struck a major refinery deep inside Russia, the fourth in 3 days in Kiev's ongoing campaign to choke Moscow's vital energy sector.
Ukraine has carried out one of its deadliest drone attacks on Russia so far, killing at least 13 people in a region more than 1,000 kilometres from the Ukrainian border.
We did see a Ukrainian drone recently hit a beach in southern Russia, killing 7 and injuring many others.
Verified social media video shows a drone slamming into a busy beach, followed by a loud explosion as tourists looked on from the water.
Russia says 3 children were among 7 people killed. It's not clear what the drone was targeting and whether it was electronically jammed or shot down. But Moscow claims it was a deliberate attack on civilians.
As far as I know, the Ukrainians don't target civilians deliberately.
Right.
And it's part of their doctrine. They made a big shift recently from targeting oil refineries, which was deep inside Russia and targeting, obviously, Russian military bases. They did shift to targeting the Russian equivalent of Amazon, which is a company called Wildberries, on the grounds that that company was supplying soldiers at the front line and electronics and other parts to the army. But I'm not aware of a Ukrainian campaign to target civilians. Mm. I wouldn't exclude that it's happened, but I'm not aware that that's part of their doctrine, whereas it looks to be part of Russia's doctrine in eastern Ukraine to terrorize people and persuade them to leave.
What is really incredible about this is, as you say, the whole warfare is changing at the moment, but also, of course, the success we've seen from the Ukrainian point of view and the speed at which they've managed to become so proficient in drone warfare. You've actually been to one of the facilities where they're making these drones. Just tell me about that and what we're really seeing and how significant it is.
I've been to several of them, actually. Mm-hmm. So what you need to understand about the Ukrainian drone industry is that it was born out of necessity. So the Ukrainians were fighting an asymmetric war. They didn't have enough weapons. They didn't have enough artillery. And they began developing the drone industry as a response. It's very decentralized. It's lots of small companies. Some of them work directly with battalions, and there's a relationship between the company and commanders. There's a way in which the factory owners will go to the front line and spend time on the front line and see how people are using the drones and come back with information. The designs are constantly updated, and the way the drones are used are constantly updated. There are many different kinds of drones. So there are some that are just for monitoring the front line. There are some that are used to target, you know, slightly further away. There are these so-called long-range drones, which are used to target oil refineries and, as I said, now these warehouses inside Russia, as well as Russian military factories and military objects. It's multiple different kinds of projects and multiple different kinds of products. Mm. There are also sea drones, I should say, that are used to hit ships. It's an industry that did not exist 4 years ago. Yeah. There was nothing there. I mean, maybe people made agricultural drones in Ukraine or something like that, but there was no major production facility. So as I said, it's a product of the war and of needing to figure out how to fight the war.
And do you think the Ukrainians at this point are superior at this than the Russians? Are they better at doing this than the Russians at this point? Do we know?
So right Right now, it seems that they are, but of course the Russians could catch up. And the Russians have actually just changed the war again by importing, it seems, tens of thousands of soldiers from North Korea, as well as North Korean ballistic missiles and bombs. So the nature of the war might shift again in the next 6 months. But Ukraine's effort to stay ahead of the Russians technologically is why Ukraine hasn't been invaded and occupied. So for them, it's very important in having that resource to maintain their sovereignty and their existence, really.
So what position do you think Ukraine would be in if it didn't have this drone warfare, if it wasn't so quick and good at developing this capability?
I don't like to do counterfactual history, but I mean, it's possible they could have been occupied and they would now be fighting a guerrilla war. Yeah. So, you know, anything's possible.
And let's consider then what the rest of the world can learn from this. Now, there have been, of course, reports in the United States that the Iran war has depleted US weapons stockpiles, although Donald Trump seems to deny that.
We have certain types of munitions that are very powerful, that we have unlimited, virtual unlimited supply. We have others where it's a little bit tighter, and we're getting them in on a daily basis. As you know, our defense companies.
When it comes to drones, they're not hard to replace, are they? You could almost have an endless stock.
You could have an endless stock. As I understand it, though, neither the US Army nor really many other armies are yet prepared to use drones the way the Ukrainians do. In other words, to integrate them into all aspects of fighting. And the Ukrainian method also favors, you know, inexpensive drones. And so the part of the goal of Ukraine has been to make weapons that are affordable because they don't have infinite supplies of money. And that's not how procurement works in the US and in many European countries. You know, the defense companies make the most sophisticated possible weapons, you know, the most high-tech tanks and ships and planes. And these are extremely expensive things that the U.S. pays enormous amount of money for. And the Ukrainian way of fighting is quite different. And so the question is whether modern armies will reform themselves to fight the way that Ukraine fights, or will learn lessons from Ukraine, or whether they'll, you know, driven by the old procurement methods, they'll continue to use very expensive weapons. It's a pretty dramatic change that's coming, and a lot of armies are going to resist it.
And why is that, though? Why do you think nations like the United States would want to resist something like this when it's clearly working in Ukraine's case and it's cheap and it's easier?
Because there are a lot of companies who have major interests in making what it is that they make now. And there are a lot of military formations that use what they make and have trained to fight that way. And it might take some time before they, you know, before they recognize that they need to think differently.
All right. But Anne, you really think that this is the new warfare and that, well, nations should be taking note of what is happening here because this could be a new norm.
I mean, it's more frightening than that because, of course, it could be a new norm for warfare. We're already seeing it in the Gulf. We see the Iranians using drones in ways that appear to have surprised Americans as well as other Gulf states. But you could imagine it being used by criminals, by terrorists. There was a story a few days ago in the Financial Times about Colombian mercenaries who are signing up to fight in Ukraine in order to learn Ukrainian drone technology and in order to take it back to Colombia and use it against their government. So they have paramilitary forces. And so you can see how the spread of this kind of technology could make it much cheaper for all kinds of people to cause mayhem and, you know, use it against domestic airlines. There was an incident in Germany actually a few days ago where a drone with explosives attached to it was found near planes at a German airport. That's also considered to be a potential terrorist attack. There's a lot of potential. And as I said, I'm not sure that either the military or police or others have thought yet about what this could mean and how to control it.
Yes.
You know, all technology has good and bad uses. So, I mean, it's just technology. And so the question is how we're going to use it and are we going to think it through in advance?
Anne, Anne Applebaum is a staff writer at The Atlantic. This episode was produced by Ilaria Brophy and Louise Mylan. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is Sydney Pete. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.